right. Hello and welcome to the Caris Classical Academy podcast. Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that we are now in the iTunes podcast feed. So if you look on iTunes and search for Caris Classical Academy, you will find us. We will probably be adding to other feeds soon. But if you go into iTunes and leave us a review, hopefully a 5-star one, or like and subscribe, if you wouldn't mind, that would be great for us, and we'll head up in the search. So then we'll have maybe 5 people listening to us as opposed to 3. It'll be great. But anyway, so if you wouldn't mind doing that, we've been having a great time, and thank you so much for the feedback. And let us know if there's other podcasts you want us to do, other teachers you want us to interview. But we're having a great time, and we're so thankful for our Caris community. So today we are going to be talking about the satellite classroom. We're going to be doing a series on the satellite classroom, focusing on different aspects of that. So this is just kind of an overview of what the satellite classroom looks like. This is our Tuesdays and Thursdays with co-teachers, parents, and students at home. We're going to talk about what that looks like, but then we'll be talking about with one of our teachers about morning time, and then we'll be talking about some other things, maybe battling discouragement. If you have any other suggestions having to do with satellite classroom, do let us know, and we can focus on those as well. But to start out, I am Katie Tuck, and I'm here with
Monty Kinetter,
Kim Nielsen.
All right, and we are looking forward to talking about the satellite classroom today. Monty, I'm gonna hand it over to you.
Okay, so I obviously don't do a lot of teaching in the satellite classroom, so I'm gonna be spending more time asking questions to Katie and Kim, who have a lot of experience doing this. And so my first question is, when do you get up, and what does your morning look like?
Katie. I was going to have you start. Okay, well, we get up at 10 o'clock. No, I'm just kidding. We don't do that. We have, it changes, but we generally try to have our kids up by 8 a.m. and get started by 8:30. That is about when school starts. Some people get up earlier and get started way earlier so they can have the rest of their day, but that's when we get started. So everybody's up at 8 o'clock, and we try to be, not every time, but dressed and ready to go at the breakfast table if we start there at 8:30.
I have a house full of teenagers, so I realized it is different. I think our satellite classroom in general has looked very different as my kids have gotten older, so we'll talk about that later. But time of getting up and what it looks like, I realized we were kind of sliding into just everyone getting up at their own time and starting at their own time, and so our habits were just kind of sliding. And so some were getting up at 8:30, some were getting up at like 9:30 and starting, and in their jammies, and some of that was COVID. Mm-hmm. But I just actually this semester decided, hey, this is just not working well. And so we made a change. And so again, they're all supposed to get up, have chores, breakfast, all that done. And then, they can bring breakfast to the table. And then we meet for morning time at 9 together.
Wow, chores first.
It's not working so well.
Okay. I'm going to have my kids listen to this podcast.
So it was supposed to happen. And then sometimes it's my fault because I forgot to run the dishwasher, so you have to wait. So
yeah, that's good.
Chores, I'm recommending that they do them first thing. But if not, then they just have to do them right after they're done with school before they do anything else.
Mm-hmm. Great. Monty, how about you? What happens in your house?
Yeah, well, I guess I'll kind of piggyback on some stuff you guys said.
Oh, great.
And maybe come around that on the back end. But I do like what Kim was just saying, this idea of creating a sense of ownership. You're not just an individual. You're not just a consumer. You're not just going to passively receive what mom or dad or whoever is going to give to you. Like, you're playing a part of this. You're part of a community, right? You're, in this case, your family. And so you don't just receive, you contribute. And so even with really young kids, I'd recommend, like, you help get breakfast ready, or you help sweep the floor after we're done eating breakfast, or you unload the dishwasher, or whatever. Like, having some some sense of ownership, some sense of an involvement in the morning. I think that's really good.
Mm-hmm. There is, I think, something, and you know, Jen Pohl is going to talk about morning time. We haven't always called it that way, but again, when they were little, I would make breakfast, right? So we would sit down, we were all at the table around together, we would start together. They were dependent on me, so I really kind of ran the schedule. As they've gotten more independent, that has changed, and that's needed to change. They're supposed to take responsibility for their schoolwork, but I realized that we weren't gathering ever together, and we weren't having discussions, and it was hard to do things like catechism or pray together. And so that was one thing, that starting together in the morning, or if some of them will start, first, and then I just gather everyone together at 9. And I think that's really important still in that satellite classroom. A lot of our families are younger kids, and so they probably can't imagine this, like everyone going their separate way and doing mm-hmm. their own thing. But again, as we're getting older kids and kids in high school, to remember that we don't want to miss that time. Even though they're independent, that's still the beauty of the satellite classroom, is that we still get to do some of that together, and they get to learn from each other too.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I want to add on that. Again, like what Kim was saying, like you need to be intentional about this. Like good things don't ever happen accidentally. My kids are younger than yours, but if we do not take the lead and initiate, they'll all be in their different, ways. They might not be teenagers sleeping in, but they're 5-year-olds playing Hot Wheels or, right, just reading their own books or going off in their own directions. And so being the one to set the pace, even if you are giving independence to your kids, make sure you're not kind of passively reacting to what they're doing. Like they're getting up when they want and you're just trying to respond to what they're doing. That's a good way to get yourself frustrated really fast. You want to be setting expectations. Like you can get up what you want, but we're having morning time at 9 o'clock or 8:30 or 8 or whatever.
I think that's a good principle for not just morning time, but all of parenting. I think it's so true that you have to set the tone and be intentional about it, because it'll all fall to, I think the easiest possible thing, I guess, would be the way to put it. I think we've talked about this before, but starting out more strict or stringent, and now's a good time. I know it's the middle of the year, but it's the start of a new quarter. So if you feel like things, like Kim has said, have fallen by the wayside, I have felt the exact same thing. So we haven't done morning time for quite a while. So we've just tried to reinstate that in our home as well. Just a quick, even little prayer and Bible reading together. But yeah, absolutely. Not just mornings, but all of parenting. We need to structure that, or everybody's just going to be doing their own thing. I think it has to do with what we're looking at, is what our kids follow with, right? Like, so if we want structure for morning time, they're going to follow. But that's also, I don't know, maybe I'm trying to look at it a little bit more, backing up a little bit. But I've been thinking about that in the satellite classroom. Like if my eyes are on the future or on what's ahead or on Christ, basically, my kids will be looking at me, looking to him. And that just sets the tone. So I'm thinking more of like, instead of being frustrated that everybody's doing their own thing, I can be joyful because I'm in control of what is going on. I can help lead that, and they will follow along. And that takes some bumps to do that, but maybe I jumped ahead. But I do feel like it's a good principle for the entire, like parenting and the entire satellite day.
I think that's a good reminder too of like your satellite days are, I mean, we're making it sound like, well, we just set the schedule and then they just follow and everything's fine. And that's not what it looks like in my house.
No.
And they're still complaining. Some, or like, okay, mom. Other times there's complaining, or it's like, we were going to start at 8:30 and then we bumped it back to 9, or like you are reassessing things. But I like what you said, is like it still needs to be intentional. Mm-hmm. And it starts with me. And so I realized that, hey, their habits are just starting to slide. Like you're not paying attention, we're not praying together, we haven't done catechism in so long. You guys don't know catechism because we haven't been reviewing it. And instead of being frustrated with that, I realized I need to model this. I need to start it. I need to be responsible, whether they complain or not complain about it. Just we're going to do this because it's important. And it only takes us 15 minutes. You know, it's not like it's a long time, but I wanted to show them first things first,
That's good, I think.
And we need to do first things first, and we need to do that in an encouraging way together. But I think anything you're doing this at a light classroom, and we'll talk about various things, whether it's heart issues or academic issues or whatever, it's that intentionality of I don't let my child's emotions dictate what I'm doing. I have to look of what do I want to see in their lives and pray. I mean, I have to pray about it. It can't just be my own ideas, but I have to pray through that. Talk with, you know, your spouse, talk with your kids, like, where do you want to head? And then you have to find ways and goals of, like, how do we grow into this? And again, morning time for us, we haven't really talked about what morning time is, I guess, but it's just, for us, it's looked different in different times, but it's just a way to start together. We do catechism together, we pray together, we talk through our day. I did a real rough schedule for them for the day of times that I want to be focus times, and then times that we're going to do breaks together so that people aren't constantly interrupting each other. They're like, I'm on break. but I know different people, it will look different. But again, it was just an intentional time for us to think about our day and be purposeful.
Yeah, you can cut this whole next section out that I'm about to talk about if I get just too off track. But just to get a little, like, kind of meta and look at really broad trends within our culture, I think we're kind of complacent in I guess civilization, for lack of a better term, of just order. Like, things are, you know, like right now we each have a laptop in front of us. We all have phones in our pockets. Well, maybe not me, but you two have phones in your pockets that have, you know, more computing power than NASA had, like, in its entirety when it, you know, put a man on the moon. And so it's just easy for us to think that, like, yeah, things are orderly, they go well, people are naturally good. If you just kind of let things go, they're going to keep going.
Yeah.
And that's just not reality. Like, civilization is like a fight. I mean, like, just, you know, practically, like, I have three boys that share a bedroom. It is a fight to keep that room clean. If we don't, I mean, like, they have to pick up twice a day. Otherwise, they would lapse into complete barbarism. in one room away from my bedroom. So as parents, we have an authority to act, right? You know, to get them on schedule, to correct them when they get off, to set structures, to set expectations. But it's more than just the authority. We have the responsibility to do that, because if we just let them go on their own, they're not going to just magically come to a good place. I mean, you know, sometimes this happens because God's good and he, you know, in his sovereignty can do what he wants. But if in terms of, I mean, just read through the Proverbs, if you look at, like, what is most likely to happen, if you leave a person to go in the way they want to go, they're not going to go in a good direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have that responsibility to act, to correct our kids in their habits and their expectations and how they order their days. And then the hope is that as they get older, we can trust them with more and more freedom, and they'll use that well, and eventually they'll be independent and have good habits and solid virtue instilled within them.
I think with that too, we have to, I mean, the Bible talks constantly about remember, because we're forgetful people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not just spiritually. It's like we devolve into chaos if we let ourselves. And so I found that with my own life, I found it with my kids, that you might have something or think you're doing great at it, but unless you continue to kind of build and work at that, it kind of, you get slack.
Mm-hmm.
And so and complacent. And so I think just those reminders of why we're doing what we're doing, how to keep building into that. Things do get easier if you build a habit.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes more natural. But even with those natural things, I think sometimes we need those reminders of, like, oh yeah, this is why I'm doing this, or this is why this is important. Otherwise, we're just forgetful people, and we veer towards complacency and laziness and ease. I want comfort and ease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like we say this every podcast, but we always do use the verse, every discipline seems painful the moment, but in the end brings a fruitful What am I? Fruitful righteousness. What a harvest of righteousness. I couldn't think of harvest. A harvest of righteousness. But it does. You know, everything that is good is hard. If it's not hard, then it's not worth it. And it's a good reminder. I totally agree with you. These biblical reminders. He reminds us all the time in Proverbs. I was thinking of that for my kids because I feel like I remind them of the same thing over and over. But I was just struck with God's patience with me in that, and then how the Proverbs are reminding over and over and reminding us over and over how we should act and not to devolve into, you know, chaos or just whatever we our hearts desire, because our hearts are wicked and deceitful and they're gonna not want anything good without the Holy Spirit, without Christ. And so I was grateful for his patience for me and was convicted that I was less patient with my kids when I have to remind them over and over. But yeah, looking to the future and trusting that the strict discipline now will bring a harvest of righteousness and joy for them. You know, I want my home to be one that just smells of grace and joy and happiness. And it takes work.
Yeah. So Monty's supposed to be asking the question, but I have a question. And either of you can answer. But I think one of the things we find or hear frequently about the satellite classroom is, well, my child's just not enjoying that, or my child doesn't want to do that, or my child is resisting doing this with me. So what do you do as a co-teacher, as a parent, when your child just like has a bad attitude or doesn't want to do something?
Katie's looking at me to tell her she needs to talk. So, no, I'm kidding. yeah, I mean, I think that the general principle is you want to make it advantageous to the child to do what's right. Like, you want it to be pleasurable to do what's good and painful to do what's not good. And so, like, please don't mishear me. I'm not, like, advocating cruelty or anything like that. But sin is painful. Sin ultimately leads to death. And we do our kids no favors if we let them engage in sin, like rebellion, disrespect, disobedience, willfulness, and then not suffer consequences for them. It teaches their heart to grow in the wrong way. So some kind of consequence if they're not going to go along. And, you know, to the extent that it's possible, natural consequences. So I have a couple of really picky eaters. I'm sure no other parents do. And so, but my kids, I have a terrible sweet tooth, and all my kids have inherited my sweet tooth. And so if you don't eat your food, or if you complain about your food, you don't get dessert. And that's like, that might not be a big deal in some families. It's a big deal in our family. So it's just a standing rule. You're going to suffer, you know, you're not going to be able to get the joy of, I mean, we bake multiple fresh things like every week, fresh ice cream, fresh brownies, fresh cookies. I'm getting myself hungry as I'm saying this out loud.
We're going to podcast at your house next time.
So you're going to miss out on that. Or like, if you're not going to do your work well, then that video game you want to play, or the movie you want to watch, or that thing that you want to do that you're interested in, like our kids like audiobooks too, like even if it's kind of a good thing, like I'll ban like an audiobook. Like that's, you know, not my first choice is to ban audiobooks, but if you're going to be distracted, you're not going to be a help, if you're not going to do what I asked you to, then that gets taken away. I mean, I think the key is to be clear and consistent, right? These are the expectations, and you might not take the work to actually do what's expected of you, but I'm going to consistently do the work that's expected of me, and then to be compassionate. You don't need to be like, ha, got you. Like, you failed, now suffer the wrath of, you know, Mrs. Tuck or Mama Tuck or Mama Nielsen. Right? It's like, I'm really sorry. You know, I'll say that to my kids. Like, I'm really sorry that, you know, we have this great thing going on and you don't get to be a part of it because you made those choices. But what you're trying to do is show the connection between what they're doing and what it's going to lead to. And then as they get older too, explain, like, this isn't just my rule because I'm bored and I want to make your life miserable. Like, here's what I'm trying to teach you. Here's what it looks like for you 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road, if you don't get this lesson now. I mean, especially with teenagers, I think they constantly think that nothing is a big deal. And they think that mom and dad think everything's a big deal. And this is because we have had friends. We've experienced things in ourselves where things have slid for year after year after year. And then we see people that are 25, 30, 40, and so on, and their lives are in shambles because that little thing grew into something very big.
Yeah, I like, you're kind of showing them this is for your blessing. It doesn't feel like it's a blessing right now. It's what Katie was talking about. Discipline is hard at the time. You're self-disciplining. Now, we're showing you what is wisdom and how to self-discipline, how to set some good habits, how to follow instruction, how to do things with excellence. But it's for, I mean, we talk about a lot, again, my kids are mainly teenagers or close. And so we talk, I can give you the tools. We can talk about the tools of learning something well or building good habits. But eventually you have to own those. Like, you have to do them. I can't make you focus. Mm-hmm. I can't make you do your work in such a way where you really learn and you have a joy of learning. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. But I can give you some good tools and I can show you how they will bless you in the end. But we talk a lot about that. And then sometimes there's consequences, and some of them are natural consequences of you're going to have to work so much harder because you won't focus. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to take you three times as long to do this as if you would spend a little focus time, take a good break, focus again, turn off the music that has words
exactly.
in it.
Yes.
I was like, there's no way you can write a paper and listen to it. But
if you're my daughter, play that part again.
Yeah, some of my kids will know exactly who I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
But I, you know, again, as they get older, those consequences, they have to own more of those consequences to them for themselves. When mm-hmm. they're little, you say, no, I'm going to give some more artificial consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, Katie, do you have examples?
Well,
without names.
Yeah. I do. I have a couple of examples, but what I'm thinking about right now, and it would have to do with this example, is the way we talk about authority in the classroom in our home, because the way we talk about the teacher and what they're doing with their assignments and what they're doing in the classroom and what you're doing as a class to learn together, there's a responsibility alongside of that for the student, for sure. But I think part of the way they look at the teacher with respect, or their authority with respect is the way I do as well. So I think this can go for the teacher. Yeah. It can go for, like a pastor or other people in authority. Like if people in the home are talking about, I mean, kids listen, right? They just do. They hear when we don't think they do. And if parents are talking, I don't know that this is the case, you know, at Karis. I'm just saying, I think that in the home, if the parents are talking about people in authority over them with disrespect or, I think there's a way you can even disagree with people respectfully. But if that's being talked about in the home like that, then the kid's going to catch that. The student's going to catch that. Again, I'm not saying that's happening in Karis, but what I'm saying as I back up and think about those things, we really establish respect for the teacher in our home. And so when, you know, the teacher gives an assignment, that's a big deal. They're doing it for a reason, even if we don't see the reason. And so not only do you have a responsibility to that teacher, who assumedly the student is respecting, because the parents respect that teacher, and I want to give my best work for this teacher for the glory of God. Obviously, I don't necessarily think those steps in their head, but that's what we hope, right? And then, so they do that, so we can talk through those things, but also, like, a responsibility to your classmates, because, like you said, you will fall behind if you don't do what the teacher has asked you to do. And there is something to be said that your peers are not doing the same thing. You are not doing the same thing as your peers. You can't contribute. You can't have this camaraderie that a classroom, I think, is supposed to be and really contributes to the classroom learning, to the students' learning. So we've had examples of lots of things, I guess I can say. So we've had to not turn something in, or turn something in less than excellent, for sure, less than good at all, because it was just a battle, and the student was just going to have to reap the consequence of a bad grade. But
the points, exactly.
But as those points come home, and I know that there was attitude or there was some issues with the way that work was done, and that grade doesn't reflect what the student can do, but it also reflects attitude, there's going to be consequences at home too, not just the grade. But we're going to talk about that at home. So it contributes to a bigger issue. So if this trend is allowed to continue, you're just going to turn in kind of cruddy work and just be allowed to, you know, skip things here and there. Especially, I think, when you get to those grade levels that you get more independent, I think there's always that push-pull, right? Is it like third through sixth grade? And I think every student is probably different. I found just the few in my home are very different in the way they move towards independence. But I think it takes some discernment to know, like, when are you going to reap the consequences? When am I going to make you do something? And we're just going to talk about it and talk about attitudes as a family. Yeah, I'm talking too long. I love that.
And I think, you know, your example of there's an assignment that, you know, as a child, your student doesn't want to do or is like complaining or really kind of creating a battle mm-hmm. over. And it sounds like you've done kind of what I've done is that there are times when I say, okay, I'm not going to fight about this anymore. You're just going to have to turn it in undone.
Yep.
And that one of the consequences is not getting the grades that you want. Mm-hmm. I've also created a time for my child sometimes, so they can't just throw a huge fit and take 3 hours of my day where we're like working on this assignment that should take half an hour.
Right.
Right.
Not
and
gonna
so
work.
It's like, no. So I've written notes to teachers on the top of like, I know this is an important assignment. We will go back to this, but I like just grade it like this mm-hmm. because we had attitude problems.
Yeah.
And I'll often write like a sticky note on, I don't have to do this very much anymore, but mm-hmm. in those third, sixth kind of gaining independence, but they don't want your help, but they need your help. And then it's this battle. Like I've just communicated with teachers of what that looked like mm-hmm. So that they knew we weren't just blowing off this assignment and that I was responsible then to pick that back up mm-hmm. and make sure we went back over that and reviewed it. I didn't want it to be harder for the teacher or expect them now like, oh, no, you need to go back and teach them prepositions because they just dug in or whatever.
Right.
I hope that makes sense. But mm-hmm. yeah, I've done the same thing. And then I think when you're talking about like what kind of consequences at home, when you said they come home and they'll also have consequences at home.
So in our home, I do not like this, but it seems like video games and screens are like the utmost gift of like, this is what I want to do all the time. So we're
the nectar of the gods.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So that's, we're kind of addressing that in our home as well. We might do a, you know, like a 3 month fast of all screens or something, or 3 weeks. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But I think we need that. Anyways, all that to say, then you get your screen time is all taken away. Even if it's just, you know, this grade, I know you could have done better. I think we need to take away screens and we're going to replace that with something else, or not even that. We're just going to take it away until you can show me that your grades are going to come up. And not every student has to be an A student. I know that, you know, I know that things are different. I know that different assignments take different amounts of time. Sometimes it's, you know, it just, I think you just have to have discernment, but it's mainly screens being taken away. It's privileges taken away. We don't ground because that's like, it seems pretty long term, but something that they're going to remember for sure. And they're not going to want to repeat that same
little
issue.
Sting.
Yeah, exactly. I want it to sting.
Yeah, I think sometimes we can be hesitant to take things away from our kids. Because, like, well, they're kids. We want them to have a good childhood. We want them to have fun. Or because we want our kids to love us, or we want them to like us. We want their approval. You know, I think a lot of parents actually struggle with that, but they don't really want to admit it to themselves. Mm-hmm. And so we're lax. We give them too much freedom, and then we put ourselves in a position where we're like ready to pull our hair out, and then we flip out. We scream. We lose our tempers or whatever. And The key, I think, is to be strict up front so you can be relaxed on the back end.
Like, exactly. Yeah.
Think about, like, you know, all of us have had, you know, a number of different teachers when we were in school, and the ones that were the most like easy going, like, you can call me Bob or my first name and just like I don't know. Right. Like, I'm the cool teacher. Like, Bob, like 4 weeks in, was the one that would completely like lose his temper and scream and freak out because the class would get out of control versus like Mrs. Hardknuckle or whatever, right? Who, you know, who came in and is like, this is how you're going to sit down, and this is where you put your pencil when you sit down, and this is, you know, how you write your name on the paper, that the students kind of initially chafed against, right? She was the teacher that had the classroom that was under control, where learning actually happened, where kids weren't bullied and picked on and fighting against each other and wasting time hearing the same thing over and over again. And the same is true. I mean, it's different at home, but the same is true at home. If you have a place of clear, consistent rules where the expectations are set, where you're not fighting every battle individually, where the kids aren't coming to the table wondering, like, what's the expectation today? Do I have to eat my vegetables or not? Do I get to sleep in today or not? Or, you know, are we starting school at 8 o'clock this morning or 10 o'clock this morning? Is doing half, you know, half job, half effort, I don't know how to put it well, is that acceptable today? And tomorrow better work is expected of me. Right, those are the places where parents get really upset. And it's like, why don't you know any better, right? And there's a lot more drama, there's a lot more frustration, and it's not good for the kids, it's not good for the parents. So don't put yourself in a position, like, do the hard work on the front end of creating expectations, especially when your kids are little. If they're older, it's going to be more work, but you can still do it. And then just sticking with them, yeah. Right? You know, graciously, but sticking with them. Yeah.
I was going to say and don't hear us saying this is easy or that we do this perfectly. Right. I frequently have to be reminded. I frequently have to call Katie on a Tuesday and be like, can you just tell me why we're doing this? So especially when you have little kids and you're doing multiple things and multiple children in different grades. And so we know this is hard, but again, it's worth it. Mm-hmm. And having clear expectations will make a more joyful home. One of the things which you were talking, my husband always used to say, and we got this from dog training, but it's actually so good for kids too. But it's like, you need to be calm and quick. Mm-hmm. Like, so you don't have to be upset. I don't have to yell. I don't have to get all frustrated. But I find, you know, on my satellite days, when I'm most flustered or upset, it's because I've let things go so far.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And so if I'm calm and quick, and it's like, you didn't listen the first time, maybe I give a warning, I say it calmly, I say it clearly, expectations, and then if you don't follow through, there needs to be a follow-up consequence. It's when I'm basically becoming a nag, and I just give lots and lots of warnings without consequences, and so then I blow, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm just so frustrated, and it makes our days not very happy, mm-hmm. and so I think that's what you're saying. And we see the same thing in the classrooms, like the teachers who are, you know, joyfully setting expectations, who practice those, who review them, who are clear. And then have a follow-up consequence. It doesn't have to be a huge thing. It doesn't have to be like, I'm mad at you and I'm angry. But like, there's just a clear consequence right away. So I learned from it.
Mm-hmm. I think it happened a lot in the early years when I had younger kids. But it does happen now, too. It feels like things get blurry is what you're talking about. Like I keep reminding, and there isn't a consequence, but like, I'm never going to count, but I was like, oh, I want to remind you to do that. Oh, I want to remind you to do that. But then I do the exact same thing. So we called it something. We called it the reign of terror. I think we got that somewhere else. But it's like, oh, you know what? I need to apologize to all of you that I have not kept things together. Things have gotten blurry. Lines have been crossed. I just want to let you guys know I'm sorry for that as a parent. And from now on, I'm going to give one reminder. And then after that, there's a consequence. Or just, I'm going to ask you to do something. And there's a consequence right away. And my kids know what that is. They kind of giggle at it. Well, not anymore. They laugh at it. but I think it's really important. Again, I'm with you. It's not easy, but I need to keep bringing my own self in and have reminders. The other thing I was thinking about as you were talking, which I really appreciate, is I got this somewhere else as well, but like in the Garden of Eden, there was one tree that that Adam and Eve were not allowed to touch, and the rest of them were just free for their enjoyment. And it's a good principle for a family as well. A garden of law, or there can't be a tree of grace in a garden of law. That won't flourish. But there can be a tree of law in a garden of grace. And I think that's basically like if your home smells like a place where it's joyful to be. So like, especially in those younger years, so it's a little bit more strict. And like you said, as they get older, they just realize the enjoyment of everybody in this family community working together well. We're caring for one another well. We're mindful of one another's needs. And it's just enjoyable to be there. When you're out of fellowship, that doesn't feel good. And so we want our home to smell that way. But there's these principles that we stick by because that helps us to be in fellowship with one another and just enjoying life together more often. So it's not easy for sure. Like you said, there's a lot of practicalities, but I think that there's so much joy on the other end. Like you said, Monty, of like, you'll reap the benefits. We'll reap a harvest of righteousness if we're disciplined now. So I think we're all kind of preaching to ourselves because we have to remind ourselves of these things all the time because we're all humans. But yeah, it's very helpful for the satellite classroom.
That's good. Those are some good general principles. Do we want to talk a little bit about the day and how we break things up?
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
So we're going to save morning time for a future podcast. But okay, so we've got up. Our kids have done chores. We've prayed. We have clear expectations. Right. We're done with breakfast. We're ready to go. What does starting the academic day look like in your homes?
Again, mine looks very different than it used to. So it used to be I had a pretty set schedule because I needed that set schedule. I have four children, and when they were kindergarten, second, fourth, sixth, three of them kind of needed me at different times of the day, some for everything that they were doing, some just needed help other times. And so I needed to say, hey, I'm going to do math with you at this time. You're going to do independent reading. So I would kind of have to look at what we need to accomplish in the day and then schedule it so that I could work with them at different times and focus with them at different times. And so we used to be a little more scheduled where they kind of had to follow that. And I frequently try to start with the harder subjects. So we do this in our classrooms too. And so when I could, I would try to kind of follow the schedule that they had on Monday and Wednesdays, just so we would develop, they would kind of feel a sense of like, oh, there's some continuity between satellite and central classroom. But again, with multiple kids, sometimes they would have to start with something else. And then we would try to take breaks. So we would try to work for, I tend to probably push focus, and like I want them to grow in focus. So, we would kind of every 45 minutes, hour, kind of then we would take a quick break, get a snack, get a drink, sit back down again, and do the same thing where we would mix in. If we did, math tended to be, they needed more focus for math. So then we might follow with, if we're doing grammar, it's a lesson where they can get up and they're reciting, but they're kind of moving around a bit more. So I kind of try to, just like we do in the central classroom, think through when are they moving, when are they sitting, mm-hmm. and then some breaks in between. Now, again, I just tried to redirect their schedules because I was finding they're lax on focus sometimes. And so we are now calling it focus time one and then a break and then focus time two.
Oh, that's good.
But they're fairly independent. And so we just say, hey, we're going to start with morning time. And then, 9:15, it's focus time one until about 10 o'clock. If they're still working on something, I'll just kind of ask them, oh, do you want 5, 10, 15 more minutes? And then we'll try to take a break at the same time so that they can break together and they're not, otherwise they were just kind of distracting each other. And so that's kind of what we've been doing, take a lunch break together. When they were younger, I tried to do tea time. And so in the afternoons, we would sit down and have tea, or they would have like hot chocolate or something. Mm. They didn't really like tea. And we would do a special snack. And then that's when I would do a lot of our literature reading.
That's great. We would do something similar to you, but I like the idea of a focus time one, focus time two, things like that. That's great.
I try to do, hey, this is math science.
Yeah.
This is, and they hated that because, again, they wanted to choose what they wanted to do first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So we do more of a focused, or did, I should say. Now they follow their own schedule, and we have a general break time, so I think we need to tighten it up, and I might instill your use your idea, Kim, but when we were a little bit more focused, I did do a specific math time. This is when we're working on math. I'm going to help you. When you're done with math, you can, this is when they're younger, you can drill math facts, you can do Khan Academy, you can do Moby Max, and then if you're done with that, you've done a certain amount of time of Moby Max or whatever, then you can have a break until we're going to hit, you know, science history next, or you know, whatever it is. So we tried to have a little bit more of a strict schedule. Again, it's not as much like that now because my kids are spread out, but it's good to know where they are in their schoolwork. The other thing I was going to say too is we usually start the year off like this and then we end up spreading out, but having everybody in the same place really helps. And then once they get a little bit more independent, or if they prove their independence, depending on what grade they are, they're allowed to move a little bit further away. So my oldest student is actually furthest away right now, and he works pretty much by himself. He had to prove himself for that independence with grades and study and things like that. So he has I have to be careful with using names. But then my middle student has moved a little bit further away and continues to do that. And then my youngest student is just, I sit right next to my youngest student. She'll probably want to move. Well, no, actually, she'll probably never want to move. She'll want to sit right next to me because she's the youngest the whole time. But go ahead.
I was going to say, talking about placement, we start all together too, and we just use our dining room table. Okay. So it's like everything's kind of right there. We don't have a special room like a school room or anything like that. It's just our dining room table. Mm-hmm. We have a fireplace, and so I use placement as a consequence sometimes because everybody wants to be all together around the fire. And sometimes if you're not showing that you can focus, if you're not showing you can do your work well, mm-hmm. I'm going to remove you from this like warm environment. I'm going to put you somewhere else.
We do that at the dinner table too. It's like you're out of fellowship, so you need to be removed for a minute. There's literally a timer. Wow, there's infractions that happen, and you don't get to eat with us for a minute. You get to see how much, and we try to have as much fun as we can around the dinner table. Oh, it's so fun. Look at our conversation. It's too bad you're not in fellowship. And then they rejoin us, but that's kind of what you're doing too. I like that. That's good.
And I don't know, many of you wondering, this is probably your first Amish podcast you've ever listened to. We're talking about shunning, right?
We actually do that, shun, unshun. It's a joke. We're not nasty about it. But
really shunning your children.
Exactly.
We might need to talk about this in another podcast too, but those of us with multiple children in those younger years where everyone's needing your help. Katie has three. I have four kids. What did you do when multiple people needed you?
We used we've done a few things. We've written names on the dry erase board or whatever you use for teaching in that main room, our dining room. We wrote on our window actually. So they had to write their name and they needed help next. I've done hand on my arm needing help. Usually I'd say I'll be with you in a minute, but they're not allowed to interrupt me. Or they will, I've had them raise their hands too, because if you're in the middle of really working through something hard with another student and another one interrupts, we have to bring in O from rocks. Others are important, right? I've done all of those things, and we'll always have to remind one another, but it is a hard thing, especially in the younger years, to skip what you're doing if you need help on it and move on to the next thing. So we've had to find some strategies there too. So I really would like to help my younger kids in particular skip what's hard and move on to something that they can do so they can actually get some measurable results while they're waiting for me. Sometimes that's you have a book next to you and you can just read that book for a minute or a second while you wait for me. But I really tried that to have them work on that skill of skipping what they don't know, moving on to something they do until I can come back to them.
I think that's also a good skill to have that you're building. So you're not just, again, we talk about this as teachers a lot, and this is probably in depth for another day, but like you're not just teaching content, you're teaching skills, right? I'm teaching life skills, I'm teaching academic skills. And one of the things is when I don't know something, circle it, move on, right? That's a test-taking strategy, basically, or any strategy. Like, I don't know how to do this, so I'm going to skip this part and go back to it. Mm-hmm. So do something that's easier or I know or I'm confident in, and then I can go back to that when I have someone, either my mind is clearer or I can look something up or I have someone who can help me.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah,
good skill.
So we should maybe have Brenda on, Monty, but when you have multiple children, more than four children, you have 5, 6, 7, 8 kids in your house, and you they all need you at the same time.
Yes. So what has worked best for my wife is, in terms of organizing time between kids, is to do one-on-one time. So she'll have like 8 to 9 o'clock in the morning is one kid, and she'll just do as much as she can with that child. 9 to 10 is the next kid. She'll do as much as she can with that child. 10 to 11 is the next kid. And then our kindergartner, we don't even start his work till the afternoon. We don't even try to do anything until the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Because by then my wife has worked through the stuff where the kids need help with. So then they're just working independently in the afternoon, and then she can just give him the attention that he needs.
That's great.
But yeah, I guess I can talk a little bit about our schedule. My kids are younger and my wife likes to wake up early. I don't, but she likes to get up early. And so we usually wake them up by 7, and then we usually try to start our day by 8. What we've been doing recently that's really been helping out is starting by doing work the night before. We don't have any screens on Monday and Wednesday evenings. And so at least with our oldest two, right, of our fourth grader and our sixth grader, it just helps them get a jump on the day if they do a little bit. We don't make them do anything. We just say, hey, if you want to, go ahead. And because, again, sometimes it's like, well, it's dark at 5 o'clock. You're not watching a movie or anything. Like, I'll do some Moby Max, or I'll work on my Cetera, or I'll read this book for tomorrow. Like, they don't tend to mind it, but then it just helps the next day be a little lighter. So we'll start the night before. One thing we've done too is, just recently I was talking to one of my kids and their work wasn't as good as it should have been. And they said, wow, it was just really, rushed. And I was like, well, I think you were done at 11 o'clock in the morning yesterday. So I don't think you were rushed. And so we're just trying to create the expectation that between the hours 8 and 4, like, that's school time, at least for our older two, for my 7-year-old and my 5-year-old, like, no, that's, you guys get to play some Hot Wheels and wrestle and Play-Doh and whatever and take care of the 2-year-old. But for my older two, like, one, you do your work and you do it well and you work on it till it's done. And if you get done, then you help others. You can read a book to your younger brother or sister. You can give them their spelling list. Okay. You can help out around the home. And then if you do those things, then you can work on enrichments for school. But you're going to be doing something school-centered. That's the expectation from 8 till 4, so that there's not that there's no, like, kind of impulse or desire to just rush through things so we can get on to something else. Get to the good stuff.
That's
exactly.
Good. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the last thing, too, and this is more for the parent that's not the main co-teacher, because that's the position I'm in. What I found that's really helpful is when I come in and help out with, like, either projects or essays, something that's out of the ordinary, because my wife is pretty stretched thin with the normal day-to-day. And it just doesn't make sense. Like, even if I am at home, I work from home a lot of times. Even if I'm at home to, like, try to learn, like, FLL or, like, Singapore math. Like, I don't know it. And so for me to help out on one assignment, it's a pretty big investment for me to jump in on that. So I don't, right? But when it comes to, like, a big project, or it comes to an essay, something out of the ordinary, or they're working on it for a few weeks at a time.
Something with glitter,
exactly.
Ugh.
My wife is already stretched pretty thin. She doesn't have a lot of, bandwidth to take something else on. And this is something I can do with the kids on a weekend or on an evening. hey, you know, you write me a draft of that and I'll look it over Wednesday night, you know, and then you can work on it Thursday and then I'll look at the next draft Thursday night and then you can turn it in Friday or whenever it's due. So I'd encourage you, right, maybe, I don't know if you're listening to this or not, you know, non-primary co-teaching parents, try to help out, especially as your kids get older with those projects. It can just help the day-to-day activities go a lot smoother for the primary co-teaching parent.
I like that. Even if you're the primary co-teaching parent, like spread it out a little bit so that it becomes more in-depth, more joyful, more of like, this is just life. Like, let's learn about the planets, the nine planets, and we have to do a planet model. Well, that doesn't have to be on a Tuesday, Thursday. It could be in the evening. We could go plan. We could do it on, you know, make it fun. And sometimes when you remove it from, you know, your normal day, it makes it more fun as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, especially some of the other subjects. I mean, like, so on Friday, my kids came home from music class and they listened to this beautiful song, Walking in the Snow, Walking in the Air. Shoot. And they just were so excited to, you know, share it with my wife and share it with me. And so, you know, we just sat down, we listened to it. It's like this, again, because it's something different. It's out of the ordinary. It doesn't feel like an assignment, but it's like we're getting exposed. We're coming together around something that has value.
Yeah, that's great. I know some people who've done history, like at the dinner table or in the evening, just so that they could spend time and the dad, you know, dad or the non-primary co-teacher kind of, you know, it was one thing that was kind of like, I love this and it's, we can do this as a family. But yeah, just kind of took it out of, and I like that too, because right, if education is an atmosphere, a discipline and a life, it doesn't have to just fit. I mean, I like what you're saying. Hey, we're going to do school from 8 to 4. Like, we need structure. But that's not the only time we talk about these things, right? We want to be talking about them at the dinner table and with our friends and tell me what you learned or what do you think about this or can you read this paper? So I think that that's a really good example of how to do that. Great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say one other thing we do with our kids at our age is they have an hour outdoor time in the middle of the day. So after lunch and they clean up lunch, we set it. I mean, literally, we set a timer. You go on at 12:30. You don't get to come inside till 1:30, unless it's obviously really cold or rainy or something. There are exceptions. We're not complete tyrants. Yeah.
It's polar vortex, but, and then you get
on outside.
But, you know, forces them to get along. It gives them fresh air. It gives them exercise, and then they can come back a little more focused when they come back in.
Yeah. Probably about ready to wrap up, but I think the other rhythm that I have found helpful for myself is just to make sure I'm not doing or planning to do too much else on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Mm-hmm. And that's where, you know, I would get frustrated is I'm trying to like make meals and do laundry. And again, sometimes you have to do these things. But if I just thought, oh, my main role from 8 to 4 is to do school with my kids, then it helped me and my emotions to not just feel like I was always so stretched thin or I wasn't doing, getting done what I was expecting to get done. And so I really had to watch, especially when my kids were little, what extra things I was trying to get done.
Mm-hmm. I think that's where 5 minutes of planning just it equals like 15 minutes of good, helpful time. I that's just a principle. But I think when I have everybody's schoolwork, their lesson plans, their agendas on Saturday night or Sunday night, and I have my own schedule and my meal, everything, if I plan my own week, it's just so much easier when I have the materials at my ready on Monday morning. Everybody's prepped for the week. It's those weeks that I have forgotten to do that or I haven't done that. We let it slide that those Monday mornings and then those satellite days are much harder. So as probably the least organized person at this table but has to work hardest at it, I will tell you it's really good to set aside a little bit of time on Saturday or Sunday night to plan for the rest of the week.
Good thoughts.
All right.
Well, now that we've solved everybody's problems perfectly.
Perfect. Yeah.
This is why we have to have a whole series.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's so many of you with lots of wisdom, lots of helpful thoughts. So we might even post this on Facebook or social media and then ask you to add some of your thoughts and some of your tips for Satellite Classroom. We didn't get as much of a focused time this year at Family Education Week to talk about Satellite Classroom and setting it up and hearing from some of our more seasoned co-teachers. So if you wanted to pop some ideas in there for social media, under social media when we post this podcast, that would be great for our other co-teachers. And then so as we end our podcast, like usual, we usually end with a recommend. So I'm seeing some eyes like, oh yeah, I forgot. Oh no, Monty's already. Okay, Monty, what kind of recommendation do you have for us this week?
So I'll give the same one I gave last time when we recorded this episode, and then now we're re-recording it. So
right.
So I'll just go with that one again. Oh. So I'm set, yeah.
I forgot what I said.
I remember what I said. Okay. So I recommend the novel Quo Vadis, and it's by a gentleman named Henryk Sienkiewicz. It was written in the 1890s in Poland.
Spell
and I know I've lost like almost everybody already. But it's great. It starts out and it kind of looks like one of those like, you know, romantic, like this guy that's like super in love and like obsessed with this like young lady. And you're like, okay. But it takes place at the time of Nero, and she's a Christian and he's not. And so he's a pagan and he's trying to understand Christianity through pagan eyes, which is absolutely fascinating. And then the more he loves her, grows to love her, the more he sees what's great about her is that she follows Christ. But because she follows Christ, she won't marry him because he's not a believer. And so he has this like huge kind of existential crisis and eventually comes to faith. And then if you know anything about what the early church was like at the time of Nero, it was really tough. And so I won't give too much away, but it goes through the persecutions. It's a historical novel. A number of the characters are grounded in, you know, Roman history. Peter and Paul, right, are living in Rome in the time, and he imagines what it would have been like for them to have tried to walk the early Christian community through the persecutions of Rome before they were killed. And it's powerful. It's like, just step away and you're like, wow, people, my wife's reading it right now, and just every night she's like, people live through this. And not only do they live through it, but he does such a good job of just showing that just the joy that and the grace that was given to Christians, even in the midst of persecutions that were just horrific.
Hmm. Give the name.
Quo Vadis. It's Latin for where will you go?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
So cool. Yeah.
That's good. Yeah. Do you want to go or do you want me to go, Kim?
I have a broad recommendation and then it will be more specific. But I think as we're talking about Satellite Classroom, I would recommend reading for yourself some of the books that your children are reading. And you know, originally I was like, I'm going to read everything as my kids are reading it. And then I realized there's no way I can keep up with all of them. So, but, you know, not many of us were classically educated. Mm-hmm. And so choose one or two of the books that they're reading in, history, literature, any of the different levels, and just read some of them. Mm. It's great for conversation, but I think just also for them, your kids to see that this is important, that you are still educating yourself. So this year has been my Russian novel, the year of Russian novels. So I actually started with War and Peace because I think, Monty, you said that was your favorite book.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And then I went to Anna Karenina. And then I just read Crime and Punishment. Katie is reading that as well.
Yeah, halfway through.
I love it. Katie has not loved it so much. But again, it's just good to like get out, like for me to get out of my comfort zone. Sometimes then the next thing I read is like some easy, you know, young adult that I don't have to take so much time with or thought. But
Twilight.
I would recommend Russian novelists. I do not do Twilight.
No,
but there are some books that I don't put on my Goodreads. Like, nope, that one's not going on. It's a little mindless. But Crime and Punishment.
I just had three recommendations go through my head through this whole thing. I don't even know what I'm going to recommend. No, so I would probably say, because you're talking about Russian novels, if anybody's read P.G. Woodhouse before.
Oh, I would double that.
Yeah, so P.G. Woodhouse, he was an author who wrote about Jeeves and Wooster. So you've probably heard about Ask Jeeves. He was a gentleman's personal gentleman, or a butler. And then Bertie Wooster was a independently wealthy young whippersnapper in England. These are not true stories. They're just funny stories. P.G. Wodehouse was an awesome writer. But he's hilarious, and I would highly recommend them. They're witty. They're fun. There's lots of little Woodhouse-isms that you'll probably hear now in everyday life. He does have a great quote about Russian novels that I'm not going to look up. It's kind of long. But every time we talk about Russian novels, I hear P.G. Wodehouse talking about it jokingly like, in a Russian novel, everything's winter all the time and people are dying of poverty and grandpa's just gone out back. I don't know. Anyways.
Can you do that again, Katie? Is that what P.G. Wodehouse sounds like?
Oh, my goodness. I need to find this quote now. Anyways, he's hilarious and he brings out the best in everything. He's really, really funny guy. So read P.G. Wodehouse. Highly recommend. And then talk to us about it.
Yeah.
All right. And then like and subscribe to our podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Oh, the other thing actually I do want to recommend if we're talking about being classically educated is Mr. Hoffman has a class for parents coming up starting in the middle of February. Reach out to him if you're interested. But he's just going to be doing a class for Karis parents on this time is the abolition of man. He's going to be going through some classical literature. This is obviously modern, but one of his most, I don't know, cerebral works, I guess, C.S. Lewis's. So highly recommend reaching out to him for that. I believe it's going to be on Thursday nights starting in the middle of February over Zoom. So.
Super important book on education.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yep. So thanks so much for listening today. Thank you, Monty. Thank you, Kim. And we will see you next time.